And then someone went,
testing, 1, 2.
I can really taste the bacteria.
What's up, John? What's up, John Burton?
1, 2, 3, 4. Why you can't have a best?
Okay, wait. Let me rewind. John, you're right.
Right. I'm just going to play us in a little bit.
When are you going to tell me we're starting?
We started.
Okay. Awesome.
Great radio. And the two guys who were the MCs, you know, it was like a back and forth.
Yeah.
Except they were both uber conservative.
Okay.
So the only people who would listen to this show
are uber conservative.
So it kind of lacked some balance.
Right.
And it ultimately went off the air. But I'm like, you know, there was a newscaster, I think in New York City, who would basically take the headlines of the day from like Newsday, the New York Post, and, you know, the Daily News.
Right.
And just like go through them. And, you know, it is amazing how farcical our day-to-day life is if you just like literally read the headlines of the day.
Right.
So anyway, I talked to them about doing something because I think there's a lack of this kind of back and forth. I really do. I think that you get a very slanted perspective intentionally.
Right.
And that's not healthy for anybody.
I have stopped watching Morning Joe for that very reason.
I don't blame it. Jesus.
But no, and you can tell even from the shows that we do, they're popular.
I can't really tell. I mean, I see you like post stuff. I'm like, oh, okay, good.
Right.
You know, that's above my pay grade.
Oh, but, well, you're popular.
Well, that's good. I mean, it's I guess it's, you know, the canary in the coal mine. You do sanity does need to prevail, and I think that that's really one of the things we've seen as a driving force behind the election cycle. I mean, I thought it was interesting that you delayed the last episode
mm-hmm.
until after the inauguration, which was actually a pretty good idea.
That I should have shared with you.
But everything within a few degrees of separation, I think most of what we discussed was on point.
Yeah.
You know, what's his name? Like, bailing on becoming the attorney general.
Yeah.
What's his name? I don't even remember his name. But, you know, I think pretty much it was on point.
Yeah.
And so to lick it, excuse me, to listen to that a month out, I was like, wow, yeah, that was pretty accurate.
Yeah.
And I still beat the drum that, you know, things had gone so far afield that's why you've seen the last 3 weeks, the last 4 weeks.
What do you think of the last 4 weeks?
You know, I think you need to, everyone just needs to, like, take a deep breath and count to 10 when you see these headlines or these, you know, policy shifts. You know, it's like the thing with Schumer holding up, this is an avocado. This is how you get guacamole. Wow, thank you. You know, and immediately right. Mexico and the U.S. like put it on a 30-day back
right.
burner. Same thing with Canada. So, you know, the sky is not falling.
Did that bug you, though? The tariff thing kind of bugged me because one of two things happened. Either that was by design and he was bluffing, which is...
I don't believe that.
Which, I was about to say, which, if it is true...
That's out of character for him.
Yeah. If it is, and it's also, you can only do it one time.
Right.
So, no. That would have been bad. But then if it wasn't true, I mean, if it wasn't strategic and he didn't follow through on what he said he would do with the tariffs, so that's not good either, though.
You know, let it play itself out. Mexico, again, my my frame of reference for a lot of people and a lot of issues goes back to the movie Madagascar. Okay, remember the kids?
That's a good reference.
Okay,
that's you a good know, foundation.
King Julian.
Yeah.
Okay, King Julian, who's like the king. Okay, mm-hmm. is the king of his little kingdom, which is nothing. I mean, we are the superpower, and we will continue to be the superpower provided we have leadership that wants to carry that big stick and swing it around. Mm-hmm. You know, Teddy Roosevelt, carry a big, you know, walk softly and carry a big stick. Okay. We have had 4 years of walking softly into that good night. I don't believe that Russia would have invaded Ukraine, but for statements by Biden that, you know, a little incursion, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Really?
Right.
Fire up the tanks. Let's go. You know, so let it play itself out. I think a lot of this stuff, I find it unfortunate, particularly in the state of New York. Within days or hours of Trump's election, I will never forget the imagery of, you know, Kathy Hochul and Letitia James wearing black, you know, with black bunting and crepe around them, you know, saying, we are never going back. This is a terrible thing. And what have they done? Okay, we have lawfare continuing. I believe nationally and even in the state of New York, people want a shift to normalcy. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we're seeing. When you poll Democrats and over 60% really don't want people who identify as female in female sports, that's telling.
But that issue is crazy, though, because, of course.
Well, you have a daughter. That's why you consider it crazy.
Right, right. But to me, that's such an of course that it's not even worth, like, mentioning. Like, of course I don't want my daughter getting...
Okay, we've got a Supreme Court justice who couldn't define what a woman is, you know.
Yeah.
I mean...
That's a problem.
When you consider...
I know what one is when I see one.
Well, you know, when you consider what suffragettes, you know, getting the right to vote, all of the things that brought us to the place where we have been with women's rights, you know, one policy statement and it's all out the window. And not to mention, you know, all this hashtag Me Too stuff that went on and, you know, the remember the big vagina hats in Washington, D.C.? Where are these women's rights advocates when it comes to the barbaric acts on October 7th? Where have they been? Okay, as women were raped and murdered, young girls to older women, from juveniles to grandmothers, where are these people? Where is the National Organization of Women? And they're crickets. And it's disgraceful, and it needs to be called out. So... Yeah. Where are you guys? Where is, you know, my former opponent, Michelle Hinchey? Where are they when it comes to women's rights, when it comes to Jewish rights, when it comes to the right to protect your own identity, your own culture, your own faith, and your own country? Mm. And the answer is, you know, Bueller?
Bueller? Yeah.
Is anyone there?
I agree with you. It is shameful not to say... Not to be outspoken about that, and the only rationale I can think of for that is political. And yeah. your opponent won't come on the show, by the way.
Are you trying to get?
Try to get her on. Won't come.
Well, she
won't answer.
Well,
and
well,
I'm like,
well, see, that's been the problem, and one of the reasons I ran. Her constituents, like you and I, can never reach her.
Yeah.
Okay. That's like been the theme song. You know, she's unavailable. You know, yeah. But she'll stand there and, like, you know, hi guys, can everyone hear me?
Right.
I'm like your first grade school teacher.
So I wrote governor. Governor answers.
Oh, they've got a whole press corps.
Yeah, but okay, but so you need something in place to be able to answer media.
You would think.
Yeah, but
unless you don't. Well, hey, try getting hold of Sarah Hanna Shrestha, okay? I mean, no one even knows who the hell she is.
Right.
You know, unless you're, like, stomping for public power, you're not going to hear from that girl. So let's move into local issues.
Okay.
Public power. Ms. Shrestha, our assembly member, and Ms. Hinchey, our state senator, are co-sponsoring a bill to eliminate Central Hudson and start a Hudson Valley Power Authority, a public power authority here in the Central Hudson service area. The entire city of Kingston Council unanimously supported that last week. Some lunatic in Newburgh is bringing it before the Newburgh City Council, which will endorse this policy. Central Hudson pays into our communities and our school districts over $60 million in tax money. That will evaporate. So let's start with, let's take $60 million out of every local budget from the state to the county to the towns to the schools.
Okay.
$60 million goes out the window. Then the state of New York has to bond out and purchase every single telephone pole, inch of wire on those telephone poles, every transformer, every truck, every piece of infrastructure that Central Hudson owns. Now, frankly, I don't have stock in Central Hudson. I wish I did, though, because as a shareholder, you're like, this is like manna from heaven, okay? They will pay market rate for everything that Central Hudson owns to the tune of probably $2 billion. And then they have to operate a power company, which Central Hudson has done efficiently for 125 years. The whole thing is insane. It's absolutely insane.
What's the argument for doing it?
The argument for doing it is that, well, there are a couple of arguments. First of all, Central Hudson is an easy target, okay? Because of the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, the Green New Deal of New York, all of the power companies have been mandated to make changes to their infrastructure, and those costs are being passed on to the consumer.
Right.
Now, the Public Service Commissioner at the time said, what you've done is you've passed these regulations with no mechanism to pay for any of it, which means the power companies are going to pass that cost along to the ratepayers. And wow, what do you know? That's exactly what's happening. Then you add in the billing issue that Ford has had. Fortis now owns Central Hudson. They're a Canadian company. They went to a bi-monthly billing or estimated billing. The whole thing was a disaster.
Okay.
And they got sued for it. And they should have been sued. I mean, they screwed up. So you have a lot of people who are angry at Central Hudson who are like, great, anything is better than Central Hudson. Well, see, not anything. Mm-hmm. And certainly not a public power authority. Okay, I don't trust these people to fix potholes, much less keep the lights on in this studio.
Right.
Okay, one thing that Central Hudson is good at doing is, you know, marshaling the resources when we have inclement weather, and our power is extremely reliable. Mm-hmm. You know, they've shut down Indian Point. They've mandated that these power companies switch from fossil fuels to, you know, rainbows and unicorn right. You know, dust.
Right.
None of this is going to happen, okay? There are Democrats in Albany right now who are begging the governor to claw back some of this stuff that takes effect in a few short years. If you happen to drive through any municipality in the area, you will see almost every municipality, from police cars to parks and rec trucks to garbage trucks, are all brand new. Mm. The reason being, the Climate Act of New York State mandates that everything go electric, and none of it's reliable. So every police car in the city of Kingston is brand new. And most of the trucks are brand new because they wanted to beat that deadline. But that's still a deadline. And we're still, like, you know, whistling a happy tune that this is all attainable. It is completely not attainable. And again, we've seen a huge out-migration of New Yorkers. It's going to continue. People simply can't afford these costs. And in New York City, Con Ed, I mean, people are looking at a couple hundred dollars, $600 a month in natural gas and utility costs because of the transmission cost. We are crippling New York State, and it just continues. So
I was talking to a lady yesterday, a friend of mine. She's in pharmaceutical sales, and well, she's project manager for a pharmaceutical company, and they're New York based company.
Not for long.
same thing. And she said, you know, we got this mandate over years. We have to get a certain percentage green each year, and she said, but it's impossible for us because pills are packaged in plastic. It's the only thing you can put them in.
Correct.
And she said, and the recycling paper that you have to use, they have requirements for pharmaceutical packaging. The recycled category, the recycled paper that would meet the criteria, you can't print images on. So she's like, we can't market, we can't package, and, you know, they're sitting on our table going, what do we do? And she's, you know, one of the solutions is,
you get the hell out of New York.
Yeah.
No, it's... you know, it sounds great. They have these wonderful ideas. I don't know how they do it, but they get this wild hair, and they're like, "What do you think?" And it's like a scrum. Yeah, yeah. Great idea.
But do you? And so it hasn't been. Certainly wasn't researched well enough. And
they set these hard dates, expecting the technology would be there. The technology's not there. Okay.
Right.
Again, no one needed to convince anyone to build the first gas station when Henry Ford started selling Model Ts. Somebody's like, you know, that's going to replace the horse and buggy someday, and it runs on, what do they call that stuff, gasoline? Why don't we start selling gasoline? The fact that we have supplemented almost entirely the EV industry, okay, Rivian wouldn't exist, just simply wouldn't exist, without billions of dollars being floated into it. These solar and wind farms, they're all done, okay? Because of the change in administration, they were floating on taxpayer money from the day they started. Wow, it's dried up. We're done. I mean, listen, I could bring you back 20 years to Vincent Cozzolino, a convicted felon, who ran the Solar Energy Consortium. And these guys went around the Hudson Valley touting solar energy. We're just like Germany. Well, fast forward. Germany shut down all of their nuclear plants, and they are screaming because the costs of power are so high.
Mm-hmm.
But 20 years ago, this county and Dutchess County and I think Orange County gave these, you know, snake oil salesmen hundreds of thousands of dollars to convince us to go with solar.
Right.
And none of it worked, and they dried up. And, you know, in the case of Mr. Cozzolino, he was convicted of fraud. And other people were charged, but, you know, the threshold for a conviction is very high. But he actually was convicted. And you know, rightly so, because they essentially went on a several-year, you know, frat party.
Mm-hmm.
They were traveling all over the world touting solar. It's like, I think we talked about it last time. You know, Ulster County Chamber of Commerce trying to sell to China. Okay, our trade deficit with China. Okay, we are the largest consumer of goods in the world. Our trade deficit is completely lopsided. I mean, one of the things that Trump's tariffs is trying to do is to kind of shore that up. Anything is better than nothing.
I can see, though, the back to the power for a second. I can see, though, the need to establish some kind of arbitrary date, Because otherwise, there's no point of enforcement. You can't just say, Pat, I want you to clean up and be 40% more green someday.
Well,
you got to put some sort of arbitrary deadline on it, even if that becomes a moving target.
Well, then you should go to Albany because they just passed a law that we're going to charge the providers of petroleum, like the Saudis and Texaco and Amerada Hess, billions of dollars for damaging New York State's climate. And it's an arbitrary number based on arbitrary things, but we just have a cash grab. It's like congestion pricing. We simply want more money.
Right.
And we're going to get it from you. And, I mean, they're going to be sued. The state of Vermont started this with legislation that is currently in litigation.
Mm-hmm.
And we followed suit. And, again, what message are you sending to business? Let's not sell oil. Let's not sell any petroleum products in the state of New York. Let's bypass the state of New York.
Right.
Or let's add a huge tax on the state of New York. Anything that's entering New York, we're going to tax the hell out of. Because not tax, but surcharge.
Right.
So that we can recoup our investment. Okay, when $75 billion is going to be collected by the power, the petroleum manufacturers, they're not eating that. They're not simply absorbing that $75 billion. Right. They are passing that on to every man, woman, and child who has the misfortune of being a resident of this state. It's pretty damning. So arbitrary, you know, what are we to do? They're burning cars and tires in India and China to extract the copper and the wires from those cars. We did it here. You know, back in the 50s, that's how they recycled cars.
Right.
They set them on fire. Okay. They're still doing that in other parts of the world. And the wind brings those particulates right over the U.S. Mm. So how do you assess what we're going to accomplish? And it's unattainable.
I would think the thinking would be we have to mandate. There has to be some green mandates. I think everybody universally thinks we have to take care of the planet, right?
Like the plastic straws or the bag ban in the state of New York.
Right.
Yeah. How well has that worked?
Something down by me, nobody has bags. So, yeah.
Okay.
But up here, everybody's plastic.
But again, go ahead.
So, and I can see how, like you mentioned the electric cars and how they subsidize that. And, you know, computing, as we move towards AI, you know, you're going to need power plants just
everywhere,
just for the computing. So I can see the logic behind the state saying, well, hey, if that's going to be that's where the money is, maybe we should make it instead of Con Ed. Where I agree with you on is level of expertise to maintain that. But it would make sense to just hire everybody back from Con Ed and just have the state own it. But that seems really unfair. So I can start a business in New York, and if New York wants to compete with me, they can just ban me from operating there?
Pretty much.
That doesn't seem fair.
It's not. Oh. But again, where are you going to make up this hole in these budgets of $60 million?
Well, I think you wind up, you know, if somebody needs to build power, somebody needs to power a computer bank, you know, you're going to make it up there. You're going to make it up in there.
Uh-huh. Okay, neither one of us went to school for mathematics, so let's not get too crazy. It's simply these are moving targets that we can't hit. At some point we might. You know, again, I have a hybrid. I agree with you. There are reasonable things we can do to reduce our footprint.
Right.
Okay. I like hybrid cars. I do. You get the benefit of the electric and the gas. You get the reliability of the gas, and it charges the electric. That's a reasonable use of.
I almost killed my family with a hybrid car.
Really?
I had the Lexus hybrid, the truck, and I pulled it into the garage, and you know they shut themselves off. But I left the key in it, And so it just kept turning on all night long.
Holy
crap. And then turning off and then turning on. Luckily, everybody sleep on the third floor or second floor. So
wow.
And but that was, yeah, that was scary.
The first time I drove a hybrid, I didn't, you don't realize how quiet they are.
Yeah.
And my children at the time were much younger. And I'm like, wow, this is scary. Like now they have technology in them where like as it's rolling down the street, it makes like a humming noise right. or a buzz. But
so you know you're on
the original yeah. ones.
Yeah, that's what I had.
They were silent.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's a scary thing.
The so the arbitrary deadline thing. So Trump said he's going to stop the Ukrainian war the first day in office, right? And he had to set an arbitrary deadline. I don't think anybody's like beating him up. Maybe I am, but I don't think anybody else is beating him up saying, "Okay, well, you said it was going to happen the first day, and now it's the 15th day, and it hasn't been done." I think the pattern of setting up these arbitrary deadlines is everywhere. I just think it's the only way to get stuff done.
Okay, I'll give you that point.
So, but on the other hand,
You approach these deadlines, okay, this is the problem. As you approach them, like hard, and you're not anywhere close to meeting it, what do you do?
That's exactly where I was going. The problem with approaching them hard is you attack your own credibility because you said – you told me I had to do something impossible and now I'm going to be penalized because I can't do the impossible. There's no way I can wrap my pills in rubber that's going to meet your criteria by 2026. And if I don't, I'm going to get fined.
Mm-hmm.
So that I think that really speaks to – but – so then to wheel it back, though, and this is kind of what I wish Trump would have done because, I mean, first off, let me say, I like a lot of what he's doing. I like the idea of looking at everything and everything needs to be reinvented.
And that's why we're in the midst of lawfare, okay? Right. Every time this guy opens his mouth, somebody's running into federal court for a temporary restraining order.
Right.
Okay. Right. What is wrong with offering a buyout to federal employees to – eliminate the raft of people to shrink government?
Nothing, as long as you have sat and talked about what you're going to do with those people later.
They're going to retire. You're buying them out to leave government.
Right.
Okay. It's been delayed. It's delayed now from Friday to Monday to next Monday. I don't know.
So they get their pension.
It's whatever the buyout program was. But at every turn, as Elon Musk is showing gross mismanagement, gross amounts of wasteful spending, the only thing Chuck Schumer can say is he's not a federal employee. He has no right to be looking at this information. That's your argument? That's what you're saying.
Right.
Okay.
Well, is there an inconvenient truth that the job market, like going back to the firing, the buyouts, not everybody's retirement age, right? So maybe I'm there 2 years and my pension is invested and I get a buyout. And now there's 100,000 people like that. Where are you going to put those people? Like I think somebody has to, before you offer that buyout, you got to do the math and say, okay.
So we should have government welfare, is what you're saying.
Well, we may have.
We already do.
I was going to say we may have gotten so big that we should not have government welfare, but we can't just slam the door on it on day one. I think you got to ease into it because otherwise, you're going to put 100,000. You and me, we're at retirement age.
I'm never retiring.
Me either. But the 25 year old that works for the government. And there's 100,000, 200, 3 million of those people. To just shut the door without a slow transition out, that seems calamitous too.
You need to let it play out.
Would a smarter approach have been? But again, I'm behind taking a look at it because I was listening to this study where they found 20 million in something stupid before Trump was president. And they tried to cut it and they said, oh, that's only like $200 a taxpayer. I'm making the numbers up, but it was like $200 a taxpayer. And they're like, well, that's not going to make a dent. And I'm like, it's very cavalier about people's that attitude of $200 is a lot of money to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And to be so cavalier about it, that really rubs me the wrong way. But would it have been a better idea to not let Musk in the door on day one, but to do an audit without any recommendations or actions first?
Okay. We're always studying shit.
Just do the audit. But Musk's not. Let Musk in. Have him do the audit. Don't do anything. Don't fire anybody. Don't offer anybody a buyout. Don't do anything. Let Musk in and let him say, okay, this is what I found. This is what I want to cut. These are the stages that I want to cut it in so we're sure that we can absorb it. And
again, let's look at November 5th. People want significant change across the board.
Yes.
The people have spoken, and they spoke that, love him or hate him, this guy is the best mechanism, the best advocate for change of the way we do business.
Oh, he may very well be the right guy for the job in 2025. He may very well be, but
they want it now. They don't want, let's study this some more. Okay, go to Albany. All they do is study stuff. All the feds do is study stuff, and they pay hundreds of millions of dollars for these.
Well, these
700-page reports that don't provide any results. People want cause and effect. We brought this guy, literally,
right.
Trump is going to effect change in this country in a significant way. That's what people want.
But it's a little bit like saying, all right, I need to lose 25 pounds. I'm going to chop off my arm because that's the first thing I thought of. Take a look. I'm not saying do it for – that's where my deadline would be hard. Say, Elon, you got 30 days. The books are open and you have 30 days and, you know, at the end of 30 days, tell me what you want done. I'm going to tell the American people we're going to do it. And
look at the amount of opposition we're already seeing. Look at the amount of lawfare that is already in place to oppose anything that Trump is doing. Look at
that's horrible. Right?
Okay, today's headline in the Daily Freeman, U.S. Reps Josh Riley, Pat Ryan push bills to rein in Elon Musk. The people of this country don't want to rein in Elon Musk. The people of this country want change. They want somebody shining a light on this gross overreach that our government has done. You know, we are a representative republic. And if you look at the papers and the letters from when we were going through the Constitutional Convention, the states very much were states' rights. I mean, that's how we wound up in Civil War. States' rights were paramount. You were a citizen of the state, and this sort of confederation that became the United States, people were very suspicious of. And the federal government's role was never not foreseen to become like uber mother, like, you know,
right,
like in charge of everything. But that's what's essentially occurred.
Different world now, though.
How different?
When the Constitutional Conference happened, nobody had missiles. You like the only thing you had to be protected from back then was an arrow. Now there's missiles. You need and we're a big piece of real estate. You need something you need something large to protect something large. Now, when it goes to like Board of Education and stuff like that,
let's talk about the Board of Ed.
Okay,
the Department of Education.
Yeah,
what do you think should happen to that institution that was started by Jimmy Carter in the second most dysfunctional Democratic presidency?
Wasn't it like 1845 they had one?
The Department of Education?
Yeah, I think they had one in 1845.
They might have for a day.
Yeah,
I'm talking about the one that Jimmy Carter brought to us.
Right.
The peanut farmer.
I'm going to get in trouble here because my wife's a teacher. But so these opinions are mine and mine alone and do not reflect Trish's in any way. There. You're aware.
My mom was.
I'm clear, right?
Yeah. My mom was a school teacher. I have a lot of respect for teachers.
I don't. Other than allocating funds, which I think is important. Other than allocating funds, I don't see what the department and enforcement. I think the Department of Education. You need some enforcement. We don't – people – you want to hand that education to the states, right? Except we don't compete on a state level. We compete on a national. We're not competing with a state in China. We're competing with China. So you need a national standard if you want to compete. If all these states have different standards, it impedes your ability to compete.
Okay.
So I think establishing a national standard and being able to enforce it and overseeing – funding and enforcing that, those should be the only two things.
Well, they do a lot more.
Yeah.
Listen, the state of New York has a Board of Regents.
Right.
A degree from a high school in the state of New York with a Regents honors endorsement was a high benchmark.
Yeah.
And it was recognized nationally.
Yep.
We have eroded in the state of New York our standards, and they all ran the gamut because of COVID. Oh, we got to eliminate this. We got to eliminate that. We are failing our children. Okay, COVID made that very clear, and people want their kids to be educated, to learn the basics: reading, writing, and arithmetic. Not these virtue signaling mandates that are coming out of the New York State Department of Education. As the commissioner just got this massive raise because there are two school superintendents in New York State who make over $500,000.
It's funny you talk about that virtue signaling. I had my daughter's a senior this year, goes to a New York State high school. She's a senior this year. So I had her in, and I had nine of her friends in here, and I interviewed them. And they're sick of virtue signaling.
Yes, they are. And my son is a senior in high school as well.
Okay, then yeah.
No. They are turned off.
I was amazed. I thought you were. I'm like, well, you guys were indoctrinated in it. I'm sure you support it in that. No,
not at all.
Not at all.
There are a lot. You know, wake up, America.
Yeah.
These young kids who are coming into the voting age are a hell of a lot more conservative than their parents.
Yeah.
And it's because this stuff has been shoved down their throats for the past five, at a minimum, the past 5 years.
Right.
And again, we continue to see communities calling for charter schools because those schools teach.
Right.
The Catholic schools were in full operation during COVID because they teach their students. And yet, in New York, your tax dollars go to a corporation of education.
Mm.
And we are simply opposed to charters because they threaten the norm. Okay. Mm-hmm. I guess you can bring that back to the Trump conversation. Trump threatens the norm.
Right.
The establishment.
Right.
He did it 4 years prior. I guess we had to get this far afield to get back to normalcy. And I think
– I agree with you. I think
that Trump, had he had a continuous 8-year term, he would definitely not be as effective
– I agree with you.
– at what he is trying to accomplish now.
I agree with you. I think the only – I wish he wouldn't give Democrats – so much there you go material. We're gonna take over Gaza. We're gonna acquire Canada. It gives you cause to throw your hands. Okay, here we go. It's gonna be 4 more years of people running around in Viking hats. God damn it.
Well, again, I think you need to look at what the last 4 years looked like. Okay, the emperor truly had no clothes
or IQ points.
No, I mean it was a known issue that everyone ignored.
That's amazing to me. That's incredible to me.
I mean, there was a point, I think, after the election where, since, you know, it was a known issue, Jill Biden ran a cabinet meeting. Like, I don't even know if Joe was in the room, but she was at the head of the table.
Eleanor Roosevelt.
So...
That's amazing to me. And what I don't understand, where I would be, I'm lawfare, I'm not a big fan of, but I don't understand why the Trump administration isn't saying, listen, you guys let somebody incompetent, and you didn't pull Article 36, is that what it is, where the vice president takes over if the president's not competent, whatever that article, you didn't do it. That's got to be. I mean, you can say it more articulately than me, but that's got to be against the law to knowingly let somebody incompetent and not incompetent. I mean, he was competent; he just aged out of the job. It's
a threat to the corporation. Okay.
Yeah, but if I'm Trump and I don't care about the corporation, I'm like, dude, I'd bring Kamala Harris in and I'd say, listen, you had a constitutional obligation to assume the office and you didn't do it.
And there's a lot of bottom feeders who were making a good living off of the Biden-Harris administration.
No, I get why they didn't do it. I don't get why Trump's not doing it. Hey, if you're listening, this is my one piece of advice, Mr. President. Start – do lawfare against people that let this guy sign stuff.
He's already kicking over enough hornet's nests. He's a little busy.
But this is a legit one, though. I mean, you know, to put the country at risk – and. You know, we were talking about missiles before. I mean, if I am positive it was discussed in virtually every country that hates us, you know, this guy is a commander-in-chief. He's not.
He's not there.
Yeah, he's not in chief. That makes you, that's a security vulnerability.
Well.
Even if we have 1,500 other generals who can do the job, it creates the appearance that we can be attacked, and somebody's going to act on the appearance we can be attacked.
Which resulted in the Ukraine attack, which resulted in the October 7th attacks. I mean, none of this happens in a vacuum. Okay, the Afghanistan withdrawal was a complete disaster. Okay, we lost 13 service members who died. Countless others were seriously, gravely injured. And who knows how many non-combatants died. You know, I mean, people were clinging to the wheels of like C-130s, like as the thing's taking off. I mean, so... Again, we have had gross incompetence for too long. Now, that's wonderful for the federal system. Mm-hmm. But then you have states like California, states like New York. Again, your coastal states. You've got all of the New England states and New York and Oregon, Washington, and California that are just hard left. And we're not going to take it anymore. And, you know... Again, as California is burning to the ground.
No, that's amazing.
Okay. I think you're going to see a change in leadership in that state.
You have to.
Now, the bad news for New York is that a lot of people who left L.A. are coming to New York.
Coming to New York,
And they're going to bring the same policies, the same political perspectives that resulted in them fleeing California to New York to vote here for the same stupid insanity that resulted in, you know, millions and millions of dollars worth of damage to the state of California.
Right.
Okay. We're going to save, like, a tree frog at the expense of people dying and complete cities being wiped off the map.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's like Pompeii out there.
That makes me sad. Because That level of incompetence is that's staggering. It almost has to be willful, and I don't think you can build that back anyway. I don't. It's twice the size of Manhattan that got brought to the ground. How do you build that back? Who's going to insure it ever again?
Are they even insuring it now?
Right. Right.
Okay. My house is insured. It's with the cost. You know, nothing keeps up. I encourage anyone who's listening. Look at your homeowner's policy and then go to Lowe's and look at the cost of a vanity.
Right.
Okay. If your house burns to the ground, the cost to rebuild will far exceed the insurance money that you're going to receive.
Right. There's a fundamental flaw with the formula that they use. Building a house is not just materials. You don't. So when your house gets appraised, it gets doesn't get appraised on the labor that went into building it. It only gets appraised on the square footage,
yeah,
and the materials, right? You can maybe buy the materials, and you can maybe get plans for the square footage that you want with the insurance money. Who's going to build it? To your point, you can't replicate your house with what it will be insured, what it will be insured for.
Correct.
Yeah.
No.
Which is a mess.
And again, in California, they had already been like rescinding policies.
Yeah.
So you've got a complete disaster out there.
Yeah.
But that's a disaster that was created by incompetent leadership. And unfortunately, New York State is right there.
Mm.
Except we're just simply not paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The rest of the country went red, and New York, particularly in the Hudson Valley, is hard blue. And, you know, no one can overcome that. In Ulster County alone, 20,000 more people voted for Josh Riley, voted for Kamala Harris, voted for my opponent, because they're not at all in tune with how painful this state is.
Is that true of sheriffs too? Because aren't most of the sheriffs Republican?
I believe they are.
Dutchess County.
But again, understand, and that's one of the things that the state of New York wants to eliminate. They want even year elections only, which are presidential and governor elections, so that local elections will be more Democrats coming to the polls.
I don't get that.
There is legislation in New York State where.
How would that make more Democrats?
Because more Democrats show up on election day for a president.
Oh, okay, okay.
And a governor.
Okay, I get it.
Okay. If 80,000 people in Ulster County voted in the 24 cycle because it was a presidential,
mm-hmm.
35,000 are going to vote this year.
Right.
Less than half. Because, well, in Ulster County, we don't have any people running on the Republican side. We have an open...
Get in the game.
No. We have an open family court seat.
No.
Okay. We have our county clerk here in Ulster County passed away. The acting county clerk is going to run for her position. He is being challenged by a Democrat socialist for the primary, and we have the county comptroller race. There is not a single Republican or conservative who's interested in running for any of those seats. So they'll all be decided on the nominating committee or at the primary. So the only contested race right now is for county clerk between the young man who's got the position that he was groomed for, who is a Democrat, but he's not a Democrat Socialist of America. And he's being challenged by the, again, going back to my King Julian theory, the deputy mayor of the village of New Paltz, who has no background or experience as anything that comes close to running the clerk's office. The county clerk is responsible for all the deeds, all the transfers, all of your trusts and estates go through the county clerk's office, and motor vehicle. But she's the deputy mayor, so she can wing it, I guess. But in all honesty, because of the Democrat Socialist angle in this county, she has a very strong shot of winning that primary. And again, you're simply seeing another, you know, chink in the armor,
right,
where a competent person who's been a deputy county clerk for a number of years, who's essentially been groomed for the position, is going to be bypassed for more virtue signaling.
Mm.
You know, but this is the move is that over the course of time, we will only have elections on even years. And that will favor bringing more Democrats to the polls, which will be from president down to dog catcher. And again, if those 20,000 additional Democrat voters in Ulster County come out and they're also going down the line for a town supervisor, a council member, a building inspector, they're just going to sweep. And that's what the Democratic Party in the state of New York wants. That's why we're seeing this back and forth over the 21st congressional district. You heard about that, right?
No.
Okay. Elise Stefanik is being has been elevated. She'll be going through hearings to become the ambassador to the United Nations. She is the congressperson in the 21st congressional district, which is basically from Albany north to the Canadian border.
Okay.
It's 15 counties. It's extremely red.
Mm.
Because it's extremely red, and because there's such a small margin of victory for the House right now, the Democrats in New York State want to deny 770,000 people representation in those 15 counties by delaying the special election, which is mandated under New York State law, to occur within, I believe, 80 days of the vacancy. And there's a protocol.
Okay.
The day that she becomes the UN ambassador and she resigns from the House, the governor has a 10-day window to set the special election, which has to be within about 80 days.
Okay.
There is movement to change that law to allow that to scroll out. They're calling for... They're saying they want to do this in the name of government efficiency. So we don't have special election, which costs a lot of money.
Oh, okay.
That hasn't stopped them from wasting multiple billions. Okay, this is the highest budget, $254 billion. Since Hochul took office, she's just given the store away. So, but I digress. So the movement right now is for a delay to occur in the special election for Congress in the 21st Congressional District, which will shrink the margin and give Hakeem Jeffries more leverage against Mike Johnson.
You got to pay the money when you have the election anyway. What difference does it make if it's sooner or later?
The difference is that you have a lot. If you delay it and the margin is much closer, again, we don't – the Republicans have the House.
So there's nothing to the argument of – it's not going to save any money. Because you got – I'm making your case. It's not going to save any money because you got to pay it when you have it anyway.
Well,
it doesn't matter when you have it.
The argument is that we should have the special election on the day of either the primary or the general in November.
Oh, okay. So you don't – okay.
But the law stands – that within 80 days, you have to have an election for a Congress member.
Right.
If you delay to November, those people are without representation.
Right.
For almost an entire year. And that, it's just like congestion pricing. Okay, it was off the table because Hakeem Jeffries wanted it off the table. It came right back as soon as the election was over. The governor has said she's not going to sign this legislation to delay the congressional election. She's saying that now because of some leverage with Trump, but the reality is they screwed up when they wrote the legislation and they are simply going to amend it to benefit the Democratic Party. But we have a real problem here. I mean, the state of New York has a Democrat supermajority that is killing the state of New York. It simply is. There is legislation right now that is co-sponsored by my former opponent to prohibit any state law enforcement officers, police officers, peace officers, court officers, from any interaction with federal law enforcement regarding immigration. Like, zero. So if ICE rolls into the city of Kingston, they, by law, local law enforcement cannot have any interaction with them. Can't support them at all. What's wrong with the system? Okay. People who are here illegally are here in violation of federal law.
Yeah.
Okay? Like it or don't like it, they are in violation of federal law. But we, because we are so hard left, are looking to hamstring this lawfare stuff, our local law enforcement, from even providing assistance, providing resources to federal law enforcement, which puts federal law enforcement officers at risk, which puts our own officers at risk, and more importantly, puts lots of civilians at risk.
But this is, so yes, but this is the problem with bringing everything down to the state level, going back to Department of Ed or whatever. This is the problem with bringing everything down to the state level. It's easier to it's easier to manipulate on the state level. So where to the point that you just made, where local law enforcement is prohibited from supporting federal law enforcement, which on the face of it makes absolutely no sense.
Correct.
But because it's happening on the
it's virtue signaling by the state of New York.
Right, right. Because it's happening on the state level. But if you argue for getting the state more governance and letting the state have more agency, then you kind of can't argue against that. That just happens to be New York State. You may be in the wrong state.
No. And again, you voted for it. I mean, yeah. Hey, be careful what you ask for.
Right.
Again, but it goes back to the fact that people simply don't pay attention. You know, everybody's jumping up and down. Oh, this is great. You know, Trump won. Hasn't really had any impact in New York State. Okay. Right. Now, if you're...
Well, eggs went up.
If you're Eric Adams, you're pretty happy right now because his Trump's Department of Justice is going to...
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
You know, kick that case to the curb.
Right.
But, again, you can't argue that lawfare wasn't used against Adams. He went up against the Biden administration and the mechanism of government went after him.
That lawfare. Where are you on the January 6th pardon?
I believe that the bulk of those people were simply idiots and they were over-prosecuted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I believe that. Again, the pendulum can only swing so far. The fact that many of those people didn't do anything particularly bad. I mean, they were occupying, like walking through the chambers or the halls of Congress. Those people should not have been prosecuted, in my opinion. The fact that they were, and some of them were sentenced to very significant time, I think it lent itself to what Trump did. Now, there were people who did commit acts of violence.
Right.
And they should not have been given a blanket pardon. But again, I find it interesting we're having this conversation about the January 6th pardons when in the weeks prior to Trump's second term, Biden pardoned thousands of hardened criminals who committed heinous crimes, and no one cares.
Yeah, I didn't understand that. I understood the marijuana ones. I get that, but I didn't understand even the.
He commuted. First of all, anyone on death row, he commuted to a life sentence.
Right.
Like, okay, there were a jury of one's peers in the federal system had deemed these 30-odd people to be so violent, to be so unredeemable, to have committed such atrocities that they were given a sentence of death, which is a huge level above going to prison
right.
for life. On the stroke of a pen, all gone. And these were really bad actors. In the 1,000 or 1,500 commutations or pardons that were given for some of these drug offenses. First of all, if you're in the federal system on a drug offense, you didn't like sell a dime bag of weed out there. Okay, you were distributing narcotics
Or you could have brought a dime bag from Connecticut over there, and now you're federal.
You weren't going to federal prison for a long time.
Right.
Okay. These are bad actors who did a lot of bad things. And in some instances, the drug conviction was a culmination of other convictions, or it was wrapped inside with other offenses. You know, in one particularly egregious case, the guy who got pardoned had murdered a mother and her son because the son had witnessed a crime.
We didn't get pardoned. He just got a life sentence instead.
No.
He got pardoned.
He got pardoned.
Oh, okay.
He was a young boy, like around 12 years of age, witnessed a crime and was interviewed by the police. He was going to testify against the person who committed this crime. The person who was pardoned killed that young boy and his mother to prevent him from testifying against this other actor. That guy is at it. He's been pardoned. I mean, there are – so, you know, on the one hand, you know, everybody's shining a light on why is Elon Musk, who's not an elected official, you know, looking at all this stuff. But look at what he's found. He's found so much waste and abuse. We're talking about, oh, my God, what's your position on the January 6th, you know, pardons? How about the hundreds and thousands of pardons that Joe Biden gave out like candy in the last days of his administration? And all of that done to negate the criminal enterprise that was the Biden organized crime network. Okay, from Hunter and then blanket pardons for anybody named Biden. Okay, if Trump had done that 4 years earlier on his way on his way out of office 4 years earlier,
right,
they would have crucified the guy.
Right.
And Joe Biden gets a free pass. So, you know, it's all – I had a professor in law school. He said, you never know from where you sit how the picture will take. Mm-hmm. And that's the truth. We're looking at this from two different lenses because the media wants us to look at only certain information. And that's why you're not talking about the Afghanistan withdrawal. You're not talking about October 7th. We're talking about January 6th. We're talking about stuff that is in play because the people of this country spoke resoundingly for change on election day in November.
Are you in favor of going to October? Are you in favor of President Trump said, you know, we're going to establish a presence there. It's going to be a long-term presence there.
Well, we know one thing's for sure. Since 47, nothing's worked in the region.
Right.
And at this point, we simply are out of options. Okay, the two-state solution is never going to work.
Right.
Never. Okay? Palestinians don't want it. The Israelis don't want it. So is it something that can be attainable?
What do we gain by having a presence there, though? That's what I don't understand.
Well, I don't know that we're talking about a military presence by the United States. You know, when you look back, there have been areas of the world that were absolutely gorgeous, like the coast of France. Beirut, Lebanon. Lebanon was absolutely beautiful at one time. It was a go-to destination, you know, like the South of France, like Palm Beach.
Right.
You went to Beirut. And then it became a war zone. The Gaza Strip, the geography, the land, is probably one of the most beautiful areas of the world.
Right.
Now, saying to Muslim countries, Arab countries, these are your people and you need to reabsorb them into your populace. Okay, so if your family was from Egypt and you moved to Gaza, guess what? You're going back. Now, there's a lot of pushback from those countries, but technically, they're your kids. They're your people.
They're your kids, yeah.
You know, you got to deal with them.
Right.
So, I mean, it's certainly worth pursuing because we know what isn't working.
That's the only thing I can – only reason I could substantiate it. But then I still don't see what the benefit is. But at least – I agree with you. Nothing else is going to work.
No, no. If you stabilize that region, the benefit is huge.
What do we get out of it?
Peace in the Middle East.
What do we get out of peace in the Middle East?
Stability. Stability.
Well, they get stability. What do we get out of it?
We get stability too. Okay, as our tankers are being attacked by drones from the Houthis with Iranian backing. Okay, you've taken out Assad. Assad is gone. I mean, right. Think about that. And to their credit, the Israelis immediately went in there and destroyed his chemical munitions and his nuclear munitions and all of, you know, the evil that Assad had put into his military-industrial complex.
Right.
And again, what about the tens of thousands of people the Assad regime killed? There are killing fields.
But this is my struggle with that. So the position is it's morally justifiable. It's a morally justifiable war. It's morally justifiable.
What's a morally justifiable war?
It's morally justifiable to intervene in the Middle East because of the atrocities, and it worked, and it's being cleaned up. So we don't benefit necessarily economically, but morally it's the right thing to do. I buy that. Then I get to immigration, and my Republican friends fall off of the moral right thing to do right into the there's six apples and four people, or six apples and eight people. And I just – that I struggle with that.
You know, you're talking about two completely separate issues.
But you're applying a moral standard to a law here and not a moral standard to a law over here, or an action over here and an action over here.
Trying to bring stability to the Middle East is a benefit to the world. Period. To the entire world. Okay.
Morally, yeah. Which is great. I'm down for it. I don't want anybody suffering.
So,
but if we're gonna take lives on a moral basis,
to bootstrap that to our country was invaded by illegal aliens. Okay, it was not asylum seekers. It was not people who were suffering. They were suffering because I mean, shit. When you're coming to New York and they're handing you an electronic benefit card that has $5,000 a month put on it and putting you up in a hotel, I'd come too.
Right.
Okay, but...
But not everybody was that. I mean, there were some, like, you and I both know people who are hiding their guy that cuts a lawn because he...
I actually don't, but...
Got here illegally and...
Listen.
And is a good guy and just...
What's amazing is... This was allowed. It's like going back to the thing with Biden being incompetent for years as the commander in chief.
Yeah.
Okay. When Donald Trump can bring illegal immigration numbers to a standstill in the first week, and Joe Biden's administration for years said there was nothing to do. Okay. Hundreds upon hundreds of thousands of people came across that border every month. Willfully, with the consent of our government.
Yeah, that's
okay.
That's fucked up.
And all of these non-government organizations, Catholic Charities, is right there. These organizations made bank off of taxpayer dollars. It was just the taps were turned on. I mean, again, this FEMA thing today where. $56 million or $59 million was dispersed to New York City hotels like 2 days ago.
Is that true?
That's what it says.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
As FEMA has no money. Okay. FEMA has no money. So where pardon me. They're not supporting the people in California. They're not supporting the people in the Carolinas. But they were able to put $59 million into the bank accounts of New York City hotels.
Well, they got fired for it.
They're about to be.
Yeah.
But they diverted federal money for this program. That's just one example.
Yeah.
Okay. That's one example this week. Right. How many multiple billions of dollars has been spent?
Are we – do you need a break? Are you good?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Do we – agree. That's horseshit. The challenge of too much too soon – I kind of look at the government now as too big to fail. And so and I kind of look at Musk as, no, you're going to fail. I'm for every 10 of you here, 9.5 are out. And I worry that we're not considering that we are too big to fail, that we won't be able to absorb all these cuts all at once. And I also I love the idea of bringing somebody private in that doesn't have skin in the game. And I would have preferred a private efficiency expert than a guy who knows electric cars, but not necessarily staffing.
You know, it's like the Gaza conversation. We know for sure what hasn't worked.
Right.
So let's see where it goes. I mean, that is my takeaway. I said it from the first statement. Let's see what develops. Let's not do the grandstanding with our can of Corona and our avocado. Okay, go sit down and stop talking, and let's see where we get to by making these moves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know, I'm very much in favor of a presence in Greenland for the United States military. Tactically, it's an area that we have to occupy. Okay, the Chinese have occupied Africa. You know, the belt and pay. What the heck was the Chinese initiative?
I don't know.
Belt and pave or something. The Chinese are occupying areas of the world that we have walked away from. Greenland is strategically very important to the United States. The Panama Canal, which, again, I think it was
day one,
Jimmy Carter,
yeah,
handed them the deed. Okay, American lives, blood, sweat, tears, and actual lives built that canal for American dominance in the global sphere, not for anybody else.
Right.
Now, the fact that everybody else can use it, that's great. But the fact that we gave it to Panama and Panama essentially sold it to the Chinese, that's not fair.
Right.
And it's impacting our ability to protect our assets in the region, on the Pacific and the Atlantic coasts.
Right.
And as a result, if I believe we should take more control over that canal.
Yeah. Well, that's a border issue. Yeah.
And again, my King Julian statement, you know, the president of Panama, the president of Denmark, they're not going to stand for this. Okay, don't stand. Kneel.
Right.
Okay? Get on your knees, because we're coming. So, you know.
Does it make sense to treat Greenland like Puerto Rico?
I don't know. I think that we're going to see where that goes. As a protectorate,
I mean,
I don't know.
Puerto Rico seems to be
doing okay.
Yeah.
Well, and again, the population of Greenland, I think, is like under 50,000 people. It's not a lot.
So, I mean, if it's strategic for us to be there.
Well, we've already been there. I mean, we've had SAC bases there.
But
historically,
it's strategic for us to be there. Why don't we just say, hey, would you like to be like Puerto Rico? I mean, that would make...
Well, I mean, there are sovereignty issues. That's the issue. You know, it's a protectorate of Denmark. You know, I mean, this goes back to like...
Oh, okay.
You know, the New Amsterdam, okay?
Right.
Like when the Dutch were running up
right.
and down the Hudson River. So, you know, there are some issues. But at the end of the day, it's strategic for us.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the resources to develop it.
Right.
Okay? Denmark doesn't have those resources. and it's really not strategic for Denmark. So, you know, I'd like to see where that goes.
I think a deal could be struck there.
I'm sure there can be.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we're going to take more control of the Panama Canal because we have to.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and as far as Gaza is concerned, I think that if there can be a sensible transition to stability in the region, it should be explored. Okay? It could be a beautiful piece of real estate.
Mm.
Okay? And again, when you talk about Donald Trump, by definition, he's a guy who has a vision where people do not. Okay? He sees the brick and mortar of what can possibly happen there as you look at this devastation. And that's not a bad thing,
right?
Because it's that kind of vision that can lift everyone up in that region.
Mm.
Okay? And, you know, to bootstrap back to the immigrants who came here unlawfully, we don't have the capacity to support. And again, I think it does go back to that
election.
Well,
if Elon does his job right, maybe we do have the capacity to
support. I don't think we do. And why the hell should we? Why should American citizens suffer at the expense of those who came here unlawfully?
Would you be open to a process where everybody that came here unlawfully is separated into the criminal and the non-criminal, and the non-criminal are fast-tracked to citizenship and the criminal have to leave?
No, because you came here illegally. And you came here knowingly in unlawful fashion. And what does that say to the people who've come here who did it through the proper channels?
Well, we kind of came here illegally.
No, I'm talking about today. Someone is at a consulate getting paperwork,
yeah,
and it may take them 7 years to get here, but they're doing it the proper way. Why should we give them a big flip of the bird and people who, without question, knew they were coming here unlawfully get a free pass? No. You know,
but community service and fast track to citizenship.
We can't absorb them. That's the whole idea. The whole objective of the Biden administration bringing these people here, in my opinion, was to change the next census, to give blue cities more representation in Congress.
Yeah, but if they're illegal, they're not counted.
Yes, they are. Every person is counted in the census. That is how.
Who's filling out a census form for an illegal alien?
The person who comes to your door in Rhinebeck is the same person who's going to come to every single apartment in the city of Kingston. No. The census is based on population, not on citizenship. That will give, when the next census is done, these city centers like Chicago, like New York, like Atlanta, will all see more representation in Congress. That's the whole objective. It is, you know, they're thinking 10 steps ahead of us. This is a global citizen operation.
I remember you saying that the last time. I remember thinking, it makes sense on one level. On another level, I don't. If I'm illegal, I don't see myself acknowledging that I'm anywhere. And
okay, but you got kids who are in our schools, and every one of those kids is going to be counted,
right?
And every one of those kids has a parent, who's somebody's bringing them to that school, or
but you can't count that. You
can't. They're going to be counted.
You can't say, all right, there's 100 kids in school, so I'm going to just mark down 200 people.
Believe me, the census is designed to count bodies. It's a body count, and the Biden administration wants more bodies in blue states so that blue states get higher numbers of representation in the Congress, and that will occur. So, no, you're here unlawfully because you came in under the Biden, you know, free-for-all. You should go back home.
And try again.
And come in the proper way.
Come in the proper way.
And I think that we should offer the opportunity to get them back there to their home countries. Not, you know, in a disrespectful way, not right, like cattle, but like offer – you know, a transition. You know, listen, we've spent billions of dollars having them here. Let's give them some money so that when they go home, they've got something to work with when they get there.
It's so. I talk about Gaza too. It's so hard to make. Oh, are you good still?
Not for long.
Okay,
got about 5 minutes.
Okay, cool. Well, let's call it now, and you'll just have to come back, and I'll finish my point then.
That's fine.
I'll have more time to think it out then.
Well,
thank you for doing this, man.
Hey, it's a lot of fun. I hope you get good feedback. As I said, I've been kicking around some ideas about trying to be the canary in the coal mine, and I think, unfortunately, we need a lot more canaries out there.
Yeah, yeah. You should. Well, you should.
You should. We'll see.
You just got to find smart Democratic people to talk to.
Well, I guess we'll leave it to your listeners to tell the tale.
Yeah, man. And thanks for coming in when you weren't 100% too. I appreciate it.
No, I'm much better than I was.
Yeah, that sounds like it really sucked.
Well, it's the iteration of COVID plus two or whatever they call
it. Yeah.
You know.
That's what I wanted to talk COVID too. All right, next time.
Next time we'll talk COVID.
Bye bye.
All right, take care.
Good? We covered it?
We covered a lot.
All right, awesome.
Yes, yes.